Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Your Own Personal Beatles, a podcast about the Beatles with me, Jack Pelling.
And it's me, Robin Allender.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I said that in a weird way. Yeah, fine, thanks. How are you? How was your holiday?
I'm not too bad. I've been on holiday, which is fantastic. I tried to have a whole week without listening or reading about the Beatles, which I mostly succeeded at. I did watch Living in the Material World on the plane, which I hadn't seen for a very long time, just because I forgot that it was on my laptop. Which is fantastic. It's such a brilliantly honest portrait.
Was this made around the time that album came out, or was it after?
No, it's the Martin Scorsese documentary.
Oh, the Scorsese one, right.
Probably 10 years ago, maybe a bit more. And the first half is not that interesting because it sort of covers quite well-trodden Beatle territory. But the second half is sort of a much more untold story of his retreatment from public life and... Mm. His stuff with the Wilburys and the more unpleasant sides of his character and his sort of philandering and things.
Right.
Which they admirably keep all of that kind of stuff in, even though it sort of features a lot of stuff with his family. And it's a very loving portrait, but I mean, Martin Scorsese, who knew, very good at making films. So if you like Martin Scorsese and the Bob Dylan documentary that he made, which is also incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, otherwise I took the time to just eat a lot of food, drink a lot of wine. But how about you?
Well, this week, I had a good week. In the first episode, you might remember me saying that I've never seen Let It Be. So I watched Let It Be this week, and it obviously made me realise I've got huge gaps in my knowledge. And it made me think about how, do you know when you're at school and you might read about Queen Victoria and you get a very simplistic idea about Queen Victoria, and then you might go to GCSE and you might realise actually it's a bit more complicated. You know, was she a goodie? Was she a baddie? Are there even goodies or baddies? Then you might go to A-level and get another, so you might read more. And it feels like that with the Beatles, like, you know, you have a very simplistic idea about what Let It Be was, you know, it's this conflicted period, they were breaking up. And then you might read a bit more and you think, actually, they were kind of getting on, but then George left and then came back. And then you might read a bit more. Like, apparently the Peter Jackson film is going to show the whole sessions in a slightly different light.
You know?
So that was what I was really struck about, is that I was expecting it to be really bad and painful to watch, but it was just like, I mean, have you ever seen a band practicing? That is like what bands practicing are generally like someone's being annoying and you do loads of stupid jams. And,
or trying to do anything creative, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how hard it would be when people are pointing cameras at you and there's under pressure to make the best record ever made.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're obviously like tense bits, the famous tense bits. But there are also bits where like John and Yoko are like dancing and waltzing around.
Yeah.
And there are bits where like, you know, they're like having a great time and doing all those rock and roll covers. And, you know, it's weird. It just makes you think that there's so much about... to talk about with the Beatles and so much material surrounding them that it's very hard to avoid making those snap judgments about things. You know what I mean?
And that's why there's so many, you know, you can read so many books that argue completely different points and people still fight about the main issues today. It's crazy.
Can I just say that was about the fourth take of me saying that as we tried to think of an appropriate historical figure to compare it to, but we ended up with Queen Victoria somewhat randomly.
I think we found a good one.
Tried to do the Battle of Hastings. It was weird. That's what I think I was struck by, this kind of idea. It's hard to kind of get to grips with the Beatles' legacy because there is so much information out there about it that you're never going to have the final word on it. Like, you know, and so watching Let It Be was great because it was another bit of the puzzle for me. But then it kind of, you know, you have more questions than I started with, you know.
So yeah,
that's definitely what's going to be really interesting about the Peter Jackson film, I think, to see the different spin on that, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So later on, we're going to be talking to the amazing writer and comedian Josie Long about some of her sort of personal Beatles. There's some really interesting chats in there about, well, we talked about loads of stuff, including her introduction to the Beatles, which is very similar to mine, which is listening to Sgt. Pepper on a parent's record player. Talks about things like her hatred of Yellow Submarine, and then lots of fun tangents.
Yeah, I really like the stuff about her, you know, her daughter loves Blackbird and back in the USSR. And so they're lovely, you know, there's some nice kind of emotional moments, I thought, when she was talking about that. But then we quickly got on the tangent and started talking about Gomez, Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah.
Lots of... But it was basically... this is a podcast about music, really, isn't it? We start with the Beatles and talk about music.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that very much fills the remit. So just before we got into that, we've got a couple of emails that I wanted to read out. First one was actually a correction. A couple of weeks ago, we read out a fantastic email about the Beatles' eating habits, if you remember that. And we were provided with some fantastic Beatle food puns. I think I called you Gareth. I'm very sorry, Gavin. It's definitely Gavin Liebert. So I just wanted to clear that up and say I'm very sorry about that. We've got another email in from a guy called Michael Cunningham from Northern Ireland, who had a really interesting Beatles-related story that I thought I would read out about his aunt. He is a musician as well, and we'll put a link somewhere where you can go and see his stuff. He's done a really cool cover of Don't Let Me Down. But he says in a blog post that he sent us, "My Auntie Margaret was born in 1935 and trained in Belfast as a nurse. She knew I was a big Beatle fan and once told me one of her patients was Yoko Ono. Now, this just fascinated me. She worked in some very prestigious private hospitals in London in the 1950s and 60s. A pregnant Yoko Ono was admitted to the Queen Charlotte's Hospital in London, but sadly, a few days after, she had a miscarriage. John stayed by her bedside and ended up sleeping on the floor of her hospital room. They were so impressed with the care Margaret gave them that as they were leaving the hospital, they gave her a signed copy of an album. The note on the album said, 'To Margaret, thanks for everything from John and Yoko.' This was November 1968, and the signed album was probably the controversial Two Virgins record, which was released on the 11th of November that year. The album was controversial because it had naked photos of John and Yoko on the cover, and Auntie Margaret wouldn't have been impressed with that at all, so she gave it away. Sadly, my Auntie Margaret died in 1995. I've crawled the internet to try and find it, which is like looking for a needle in a haystack. But it's not really about the money. I'm so pleased Margaret was there to help the Lennons in the time of need, so much that John gave her a signed copy of his record. Anyway, if you happen to come across a signed copy of a John and Yoko or Beatle album reading 'To Margaret' from John and Yoko, please drop me a line. I would love to see it."
Oh, that's nice.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
So if anyone does find that, then please do get in contact with us. Or for anything else for that matter, you can tell us about some of your formative Beatles stories and we read all of your emails and we try and read out as many as we can. So thanks so much for all the people that sent them in. And for all the people that have written us lovely reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts and Acast, where it matters the most. We've got a few this week that we're really sort of flattered by, and it really helps other people find the podcast. So
yeah,
it's very kind of you to do so. So please continue. If you want to support the show, you can go to personalbeatles.com/donate and help us cover the costs of it. We've got some amazing guests coming up, and we want to keep going from sort of strength to strength. So that also really helps. And then, yeah, just follow us as normal on social media. If you want to get in contact there, we're at Personal Beatles on Twitter, Instagram, and Spotify.
Social meads.
So for now, let's get on with the show. Here is the absolutely fantastic Josie Long. Robin and I are delighted this week to be joined by writer and comedian Josie Long. Hello, Josie Long.
Hello, and I'm glad you put writer at the front because that's all I can do for
that's
now.
Great.
It's a comedian. You should be former comedian and future writer.
That's yeah.
But you did a gig the other day though, didn't you? Your first of did you not do the drive-in ones?
Oh yeah, but those I don't know if those count. Those are like performing to people while they're in their cars, and instead of hearing laughter, you hear them honking their horns.
Really? They honk their horns?
Yeah, it is fucking dystopian.
That's quite odd.
Oh my god. Because like I listened Mad to, I really liked David O'Doherty released a Bandcamp album, which was like live in his car. But he had to do that thing you do where you're sort of like, the audience isn't laughing, so he sort of rushes into the next joke as if it's doing going really badly.
You know? It's a brutal thing. I do a lot of stuff on Twitch at the moment, and I genuinely get people to comment in the chat, ha 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 ha. And then I live for that. I'm like dying for that. And then when I see like lots of like ha 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 or like a little laughing emoji, then I'm like, oh. It's going brilliant. Well. Finally, it's going
And you
well.
Can sort of have a glass of water. Kind of,
just let it rack up.
Rolling laugh.
Also, there's like a 30-second delay. So you have to then factor in, okay, 30 seconds ago I was doing that bit, so that bit went down well.
Right, yeah.
And this bit is dying.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of online tutoring during lockdown. That's how I kind of... necessity being the mother of invention. That's how I sort of try... was getting by. Mm. But I try and do sort of... jokes and things, but there is that you have to sort of think for 30 seconds, oh, this isn't going very well, and then they sort of laugh. And
you know. Yeah, and then are you tutoring people all around the world?
Yeah, I've got a guitar student in Saudi Arabia.
Wow,
nice. Yeah. Amazing,
which is cool. Have you been podcasting during this time as
yeah.
well?
Yeah, too bloody much, man. Me and my friend Robin Ince do a kind of books podcast, and during lockdown for the first kind of 12 weeks, we basically did a show every day, and it was just
great. I saw some of those.
Oh, thanks. But it's just both of us being like, how do we not lose our minds? And so we're just like, welcome to our morning show.
And you're doing that every day?
5 days a week, and then I would do something else on a Sunday and he would do something else on a Saturday.
Wow, that's so cool.
Nice. It puts us to shame with our work ethic.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it was just absolutely forged from pure panic.
Have you listened to much music during lockdown? Or
oddly, less than normal, with the exception of an Australian artist called The Wiggles. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Oh, I don't know The Wiggles.
They are a children's band. A children's band for two-year-olds. And they've got some absolutely solid bangers. I'm not even going to dispute.
What's the classic Wiggles?
I can see clearly now. I've got my glasses on.
Wow,
that's good.
Clever stuff.
It's thought provoking. So I put on a lot of that. I found myself listening to more podcasts than before, and then putting on music in a really crappy way of like, I'll have music on in the background when I'm writing, which doesn't really feel like listening to music. It just feels like taking advantage of music. In a bad way.
I find it very hard to like. Podcasts have been a massive blessing in my life for the past, 10 years or whatever. But I do feel like I'm cheating on music a bit by just how much I listen to them, and I have to stop myself, just like raiding through the podcasts and actually listening to some new music. Because that's why
I think I found myself kind of not listening to as much new music as I normally would, because you sort of just feel sad, because it's like, oh, I'd love to see this band on tour. And it's just. I think I've just been. Also,
it's such a strange time, and so people were releasing music that was applicable to circumstances prior to this.
Yeah. So do you feel like all art somehow needs to be able to engage with this? Or
I don't know, it's so tricky, isn't it? Because maybe in a year, I don't want anything that's engaging with this.
There's
a song by this really sweet group that I found via somebody sharing a TikTok on Twitter, which is just the bleakest thing in the world. But it's called Avenue Beat, which is like, I think, two or three very sweet women about 20 years younger than me. And they've got a song called F2020, which is just her saying fuck 2020 in a very sweet way. And it's also very like a different stage of life to me, because this girl's like singing December 2019, I lifted up a beer and I said to everyone, 2020 is going to be my year, bitches. And then it's like, my cat died and then a global pandemic took over my life. And I'm like, babe, the cat bit is really not the headline. You've buried the leader here. But it's a great song. But other than that, what have I been listening to? I've been listening to Nina Simone, because I hadn't for years. I've been listening to Jeff Buckley, who I was obsessed with as a teenager and then didn't give a damn about for a long time. Phil Oakes.
Last night I was in, Ruth and I were in a taxi coming back. It was quite a long journey. And I sorry, this sounds incredibly pretentious, but the driver said, like, oh, what, is there a radio station you'd like to put on? And I said, Radio 3.
Yes!
But then it was like Late Junction or a program like that. So it was like basically a sound of kind of a violin being dropped on the floor. Mm. But so I had to really double down on it and say, I am enjoying it. And then it was like a field recording of like cars driving by. Which is like, you know, what you know, we don't need the field recording. We've actually got cars driving by. And then...
Yeah, you should have recorded that and it would have been a sort of
John dropped Cage us off experiment. And like he pressed the off button on the radio very quickly, probably about as quickly as he gave me a 1-star rating as well. I don't know.
I think you've got to normalise Radio 3.
Yeah, right.
I love a bit of Radio 3, why not?
I love Radio 3 so much.
I love, do you listen to it in the morning? It's very relaxing.
I used to. But then my daughter, who's a demon, learnt how to turn off the radio and shout, no music, no music. Okay. So we don't listen to that.
Too much music in the world. Well, speaking of music, I mean, this is a podcast about the Beatles, so we should probably mention them, really, shouldn't we? Do you like the Beatles?
Yeah, I do. Anyone who says they don't like the Beatles is a liar and a churl.
Churl.
What's your sort of, how did you get into the Beatles? Or was it one of those kind of things that was always...
No, it's one of the few bands that I've got like a clear remembrance of the origin story.
Oh, great.
And it's that when I was about, I think, 8 or 9, I really, really was... became aware of my parents' record player and my parents' record collections. Mm. And about the only thing, like, my mum had a few Donovan albums, but she had like 10 Beatles albums, which were then stolen in the most part by my sister's second fiance, Anthony.
Oof, shit.
Motherfucker. He stole Rubber Soul, he stole Abbey Road, he stole like most of the good ones. And all I managed to steal was Revolver and Sgt. Pepper, which, you know, I don't regret. If you can, fair enough.
Yeah.
But
when he stole them, do you mean like he borrowed them and didn't give them back, or he actually was...
He literally came around the house and stole them.
Jesus Christ.
And my mum never saw them again. But my mum, I've never known my mum really to listen to music, apart from like sort of in the car. So it was just this thing that when my parents weren't in the room, I would get out Sgt. Pepper and put that on and be like, what is this?
Amazing.
And sort
so this is quite young, so like 8 or 9, you're saying?
Yeah, maybe 10. Yeah. But it was, so my parents got divorced when I was 12 and we moved pretty sharpish. So it was... before that, and it was definitely before I was at senior school, because once I was at senior school, I could tell you like month by month what music I was listening to.
So was the Beatles like your first musical awakening, or was it just something that you listened to and liked, because or was it kind of...
I think it was quite a musical awakening for me, you know. I think definitely Sgt. Pepper was like probably the first album that I listened to on my own. And it sort of was like, what the like the benefit of Mr. Kite, like what the fuck, like you like, and I'd be there, and I do still maintain this kind of attitude to Beatles records that, like, for fucks, like you'll be loving a song, and then there's just a fucking stupid song. Like you'll be loving a song, and then the three of them went out. I used to have some stand-up about this, about how they were recording Revolver, and George and John and Paul were like, oh, getting a bit tired now, I'm gonna go. I can't do an accent, as you can tell. Ringo, we're gonna go to the shop and buy some egg sandwiches. What accent even is this? Ringo, we're gonna go to the shop and buy some egg sandwiches. Can you look after the studio while we're in the shop? And Ringo's like, yeah, of course. And they're like, just one thing, Ringo, can you promise me you're not going to record a fucking shit kid song onto the album while we're out? No, of course not. In the town. Fucking bollocks. So basically that's, I started out listening to Sergeant Pepper and just being like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. A Day in the Life. That was the one that I was like,
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that's, yeah, like my experience with Sergeant Pepper is definitely, it's not one I go back to a great deal because I think When I'm 64 is rubbish.
Yeah, this is exactly it. It's like they build something beautiful and then they're like, every summer we rent a cottage, fuck off.
Did you even think that when you were eight, though? Because I remember finding that quite like charming when I was eight.
No, I was over it. Because I was like, don't patronise me. Give me the good stuff.
The ones I really couldn't deal with was Good Morning, Good Morning.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is...
I found those sort of compressed brass absolutely terrifying as a child. They're so, like, sort of intrusive and stabby and...
Right. What's the line in... Hang on. When I'm 64, when he's talking about Vera...
Vera, Chuck and Dave.
Yeah. Vera, Chuck and Dave. Sure. I remember, like, that it was played at... a school concert, someone performed it, and my parents just were like, they loved the Sergeant Pepper, but in the car back they were like quoting it as if it was like an amazing line, which made me think that I think my dad always liked the Beatles for those kind of northern isms, as it were.
But yeah, it's very Paul, isn't it?
But I was sort of quite impressed, like the way that Dad would be quoting it almost as if it was like from an Alan Bennett kind of play, which I suppose is not a million miles away, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what it's supposed to be, that sort of kitchen sinky social realism.
And I thought that's really, I mean, that's what's so lovely about that, although I do still hate that song.
Yeah. Have you ever heard one of the worst things that's ever happened?
James Corden?
No, it's not too dissimilar to that. They did a Beatles covers album, I think for charity, but it's the bad outweighed the good. And Russell Brand did a cover of When I'm
64. No, that's the worst thing I've ever fucking heard.
But
in
he's
my
done
life.
It in he does it in this really sort of like when I get older, losing the air sort of thing, like Arthur Atkinson.
Yeah, this is my problem with like the Beatles. And that I think it's in some ways it's my problem and not theirs. Like, how wonderful to have that diverse an output and how wild to put out a record that is at once deeply serious and beautiful and silly and end of the pier and embodying a time that none of us were alive during, that none of us will experience in that way. But I'm also like, if I want to listen to something that really captures things in that way and is silly, I'll listen to the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. I won't listen to the Beatles. What I want from the Beatles is the sort of sincere stuff.
That's a really interesting point, because like I think we're going to be interviewing Kevin Eldon and Jem Roberts.
Send in my love.
About a book that Jem Roberts has written about the Beatles and comedy. And I think that is a really interesting topic, because George Harrison, there's a quite great quote in it. George Harrison in the book said it's serious and not serious at the same time, which I think is so good. And I think that's a really interesting question, is because there's so much mucking about and they're so informed by comedy.
Yeah. And they made comic films together.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, how do you balance that with the sincerity? You know, like sometimes I'm listening to the White Album or Sergeant Pepper and I will skip past the silly songs because, you know, I want to hear Sexy Sadie or something.
Sure.
Which is also actually a bit silly, but is really beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you want to skip Rocky Raccoon to get to Julia, don't you?
Fucking always. It's so rare. What did I put on? I was playing my daughter. It's the White Album, isn't it? Blackbird. Yeah, I was playing my daughter the White Album just the other day, and it was really interesting seeing which ones she would perk up to and which ones she wouldn't, because she likes Blackbird and was introduced to that via the film Boss Baby, where they sing that. It's a very good film, very five stars across the board. But I felt really shamed by the fact that I hadn't really got round to playing her much music yet, partly because she likes nursery rhymes and kids' music.
Yeah.
And partly because...
Well, you don't want to be one of those like people who's like, first of all, it's in rainbows. You know, you don't want to be one of those.
And I don't want to be like, her favourite music, sorry, David Bowie and the Ramones. I don't fucking want to be like that. I want to be like, her favourite music is The Wiggles. She's 2 years old.
Yeah.
Does she love a bit of Yellow Submarine or a bit of...
She's not having that shit. it.
That's what I said. Saying in nursery, it didn't do me much harm.
I feel guilty that there are certain Beatles songs that I have real animosity towards. And Yellow Submarine.
I think that's okay. I think that's a really good thing to talk about, because it's like not... One of the questions we ask is sort of like, what's your controversial Beatles opinion? But I think it's fine to say... I mean, even, you know, they would say some of those songs weren't very good. But still, the Beatles, it's all part of the story, isn't it?
You
love so much.
And also, they're held up to a higher standard, aren't they? Like, a song you don't love on an album is pretty common for most albums. Mm.
But do you want an album to be just a selection of bangers, or do you want it to take you on some sort of... you know, journey around the houses of the...
I tell you what I want from an album as I've grown up is something that I'm asleep by the end of.
I just want an album. I just want to like everything on it. And I want, I definitely want it to take me on a journey, but I don't want that journey to be, I'm only sleeping, finishing in the town. Fuck you. Fuck the town where you were born. You've just played me the most beautiful song. The 60s are fucking heard, and then that shit. Oh no, hang on. And then we get Here, There, and Everywhere. Like, are you high? Yeah. Yes, you literally are high. Like, you've got, right, Here, That, When I'm Only Sleeping, Here, There, and Everywhere. Don't fucking.
Beautiful.
What are you doing? Putting that in the middle.
Yeah, it would be weird on In Rainbows if they just went into sort of Bob the Builder style children's song in the middle.
Exactly.
I'd have Yellow Submarine over Octopus's Garden.
That's the other one. Those are the two. And like I at times in my life have espoused the theory that Ringo Starr is the best Beatle, and I've done it mainly to piss off people who consider themselves more serious people than me, which as a very sincere person is a rare chance for me to troll. But also because up until Brexit, when he started being like, I love Brexit, peace and love. Blech. And he also was like, don't write me any more fan letters. And I was like, fuck you.
Oh, yeah, peace and love. Yeah.
I forgot about his Brexit. I kind of blanked that out of my mind.
I don't think he... Didn't he just say... Wasn't it what something where at the time... I think it was after the vote, maybe, he said, it's over, just get on with it. But then it would kind of... Someone found the clip 2 years later, so it sounded worse than it was, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what happened, but I might be wrong.
Okay. I mean, millionaire expat becomes Brexit supporter isn't exactly the most surprising narrative.
Exactly. The Roger Daltrey. But I kind of almost, I mean, Roger Daltrey has sort of gone so mad.
Oh, God.
Not mad, but like he's... I don't know, there's a sort of grudging admiration in the way that he's just...
Off the deep end.
Gone in the deep end. Yeah.
He's committed to the bit.
Yeah.
I think
John, we've often sort of theorised about what John's personal politics would be had he survived. I think he would probably be quite Brexity.
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about their class politics prior to this because I saw a picture, or I think I was watching TV, and they went to... the house that I think George Harrison grew up in. Fuck, they went to one of the Beatles' houses and I was like, hold on, you told me you were nice working class lads. This house is nicer than any house I've ever lived in my life.
I think that there is I think it's like Ringo was the only working class Beatle, really.
So Auntie Mimi famously would be a bit dodgy about Paul coming round because he was a bit lower class, and then George wasn't allowed to come in through the front door. And then I don't think she would have anything to do with Ringo.
Really?
So I think they go in that sort of order.
So it's hard, though, because usually I would say, okay, if somebody's from a sort of lower economic background, I would trust more that they wouldn't go off the deep end. But you just never know, especially when someone's minted. So who knows how they would be.
Yeah.
I think about that with John a lot. I do kind of think, would he... How would he have influenced the next kind of 20, 30 years?
Yeah, it's so hard to think of because he is such a huge cultural figure. I can't remember. Do you know John Deacon from Queen?
Sure.
The bass player. He's just given... I think it's so admirable to just say, no, I'm not having anything to do with Queen anymore. I just want to live my life and quietly, you know. I'd love it if John Lennon had done did that if he was
alive. That's a thing called, and this is why I used to have admiration for Ringo, because I feel like there's a thing called you won the game, game over, which is like, although to be fair, in the last few years especially, I have so much love and respect for Paul McCartney. And actually, I don't really believe this anymore. But I think when I was younger, I was like, mate, the Beatles, unfortunately, you won the game straight out the traps. Game over, mate. No, don't be playing other games. You won the game. It's over. When you win the game, it's over. You've completed the game. But I do kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just glad of him still being here so much.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I think, incredible to think. I don't know, like, whenever I watch old films, I've been watching a lot of Beatles films this week, and I just, you're watching them and it looks like such a long time ago.
Yeah.
I love watching, I was watching Let It Be in the rooftop concert, and there's a businessman out in the street saying, I just think it's a bit of an imposition, really. They're playing up there, disrupting you. It's so great. And it just seems like such a different era, you know.
Yeah.
And to see Paul there and to think Paul's still here is, like, magical, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Well, you know? And also that feeling of, I was talking with this about a friend, talking about this with a friend where I was born in 1982, and that was kind of 12 years after the Beatles called it a day, isn't it? It's the 1970s.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then that's 12 years. And now, all, you know, the difference.
So much more time has passed.
It's wild, you know. That I was so close to them, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that kind of compressed time of the 60s as well. I was thinking, like, Let It Be is 5 years after Hard Day's Night. Which is fucking insane. I'm still wearing T-shirts I got 5 years
ago. I'm still wearing T-shirts I got 25 years ago. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I literally
I've got tins of beans that are 5 years old.
Yeah,
I haven't changed so graphically as a person between those 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the sort of unrepeatable phenomena of that band. I can't see anything else. I've just been on holiday and I had made the decision to not do anything Beatlesy for a week because I was getting quite worried about getting oversaturated from doing this, which I absolutely love. But I was like, okay, I've had so many arguments with people about the Stones. I'm just going to listen to the Stones' whole back catalogue until I can sort of bear it. And I got into the sort of early 80s. But it's so interesting that, like, listening to all of their, as someone who has been around since then, and until now, is that period is the same, like the insane amount of creativity. It wasn't really unique to the band as much as it was unique to that era. And although they kind of went on a little bit longer, it's just crazy. Yeah. The late 60s is just the most prolific time for anyone creating anything.
I think that's true, but I also think that the things where that progress has been so dramatic and so wild in recent decades have not been through music, you know, like changes in cinema will be that pronounced perhaps in the 70s going into the 80s or changes in like design and computer game design. It's like other worlds that have had those revolutions.
Well, and dance, you know, obviously dance music as well, where it's just constantly evolving and it's never looking backwards. And that's almost the whole purpose of dance music. I sound like I'm about 800 years old. Dance music.
Dance?
But you know what I mean? Like,
dance.
But like, it's constantly changing and it's being led by, you know, audience response, people dancing to this, so it must be good, and this kind of evolution that's constantly happening. And,
well, I suppose a lot of that is people sort of evolving along with the technology, which is kind of what the Beatles did at the time.
Yeah. Mm. Well, also just the period in their lives. It's such a transformative period in sort of going from being 21 to 28 and also having those opportunities to thrive under those circumstances. Yeah. It's wild.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So let's go back to... you. What's so, because I mean, I've always loved your taste in music and the way you write about music and things.
Well, thanks.
You know, and you've got a lot, you know, you've got a lot of love for Bob Dylan and sort of classic and Stevie Wonder. I remember you wrote a brilliant tweet about how much you liked Don't You Worry About a Thing by Stevie Wonder.
Oh, the my best favorite Stevie so Wonder funny.
But I know, it's brilliant. Yeah,
this is the thing, that song is both completely sincere and completely funny.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Well, he's sort of doing that chat-up thing at the start, you know.
It's been very, very fluent, man.
Yeah, you almost can't remember the word for fluent, can you? Sort of very, it's great. But, like, so as you're growing up and getting older, and how did the Beatles fit into all that? Well, it was a kind of sort of musical development and things.
I guess I go away from them and I come back to them and I... And also I suppose they allow a very deep and instant nostalgia that I find really helpful. like Blackbird, like listen to Blackbird with my daughter, and like there are some songs that like if I try and sing them a bit, I'll just cry straight away. And that is genuinely actually quite useful to be able to access that.
Right. Is that because of your memory of the listening to the songs or the songs themselves?
Combinations of both. I think the songs themselves, like to lead a better life, I need my love to be here. Oh my God, come on. Like that song in particular, that's just one of my all-time favourites of theirs because...
Yeah, it's his favourite, I think, he says, doesn't he?
Does he?
Really?
Paul says it's the best favourite song he's ever written.
It's a beautiful song. Absolutely beautiful. But also, Revolver is an album that, like, is always, if somebody made me do a top 10 list of albums, it would be in my top 10 list of albums. I think it's just stunning. So that's something that never really is too far away from.
Yeah, it's one I can always go back to and always put on, I think, and listen to all the way through. And,
yeah.
Yeah. There is even Yellow Submarine. Apart from Yellow Submarine, yeah. It's one of those records that feels like it's about 15 minutes long because it's such a joy to listen.
Yes. And also, I mean, the diversity just on that record is insane. Like, Tomorrow Never Knows is a completely different song to the other two. It's like, it's a very cool record.
I was in the pub the other night before I got the taxi back with the Radio 3 on, and they were playing She Said, and it was just, God, it just sounds so fresh and like just so contemporary, and you know,
no wonder he was so annoyed that you put on Radio 3 after that.
She Said, it is it's quite like Beach Boysy to my mind.
I think that's what they were going for quite a lot on that record, was that was during the sort of transatlantic back and forth between Paul and Brian Wilson.
Oh my God, of course.
Well, someone made a, I think it's probably Ian McDonald again, because that's the only reference point, but he makes a good point of comparing Here, There and Everywhere to Don't Talk, Put Your Head on My Shoulder, being very similar moods.
I don't even think I know that song. Isn't that sad? Hang on, I'm going to put it on.
It's on Pet Sounds.
Oh, well, then of course I fucking know it. Sorry, I just haven't.
So John Higgs put together an amazing playlist of sort of obscure Paul songs, not obscure Paul songs, but kind of songs that show the range of Paul and maybe the absurdity that kind of gets overlooked, and also just other kind of curios. But there's a live version of Here Today. Have you heard that?
Yeah. Well, he plays it every time he plays, I think, pretty much.
Right. But there's a live version. It was recorded in Amoeba Records, which is, oh my God, it's very tear jerking. It's incredible.
But I will listen to that. That sounds thrilling. I was just looking. Also, I really like how he's curated the thread with, because when you look at the photos, you're like, oh my God, Paul McCartney's so cool. And he was so good looking. And he's so nice.
So beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sort of late Beatles period, he's just every picture of him is like, how can you be that photogenic that they're literally, as the most photographed human on Earth, has not one bad photo of you for like a 4-year
but
period.
I will argue that Ringo Starr was absolutely beautiful when he was young. He had a stunning face and a fine physique and a melancholy quality to him.
One thing that we talk about quite a lot is the sort of favourite Beatle journey that people go on throughout their lives. So have you had a journey of your favourite Beatle? Most people, they start with Ringo and then they go John and then they go George and then they go
No,
Paul.
I went John, totally. John for ages because John, like, seemed cool. Then Ringo when I found out about John, John's personal life. And then George, I guess, is what I would have told people. But now it really is Paul. I'm not going to shift now. Like, Ringo was fun, but the time to put away childish things has come.
Have you ever been to see Paul?
No, I haven't. It's funny with that. Gosh, that is funny. I've never thought it was... This can sound so silly, but it's the same with Bob Dylan. I've never thought... It's always seemed so at a distance from me. Isn't that bizarre? Mm. Gosh, I really ought to. I've never really been to see, apart from like people headlining at Glastonbury, I've never really been to see any kind of... I went to see like Elvis Costello is about the furthest back in terms of like...
Mm. I'd love to see
Elvis Costello. He was pretty good.
Yeah, but it's, I suppose when you're seeing those legends, you know, when I've seen like Neil Young or The Who or whatever, it's almost like watching a tribute band of someone who's a bit like... what you want them to be, whereas Paul is exactly what you want him to be.
Right. Like. I tell you, I saw Richard Thompson a few years ago, and that was like, that was brilliant because you'd got that sense where you were like, I'm watching a kind of living legend, but he was also doing such an interesting set. It was that 2000 years of popular music set. Which is really
good. How long ago was that then?
About 2000 years ago. No, it was about 10, 15 years ago, I think.
Yeah, it's hard.
He does Britney Spears.
There is a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of pressure on it as an interaction, and you want them to live up to what you want from them, and that is hard. Yeah,
and for every Paul, there's going to be a Bob Dylan experience.
Yeah, and
the best one I ever saw, actually, and probably is the way to do it if you're an absolute living legend, is Glastonbury about 10 years ago, and Ray Davies just played the acoustic tent, and he just played on his own with an acoustic guitar. Wow. And just played every single hit.
Wow.
And it was just phenomenal. Everyone going absolutely crazy.
Josie, did you ever see Jeff Mangum on the reunion thing?
I did. I saw him at the Union Chapel and it was amazing. It was so... Yeah. You know, they had the trumpets and the bagpipe hidden at the back of the... at the back of the church, and they all came in, and I cried. It was wonderful. That was astonishing.
That was one for me where it's like I'd been listening to that album for such a long time and knew it so intently, and then you know you thought he'd never play live again. So that was one where I thought it was at ATP, I think, and he played solo, and it was brilliant. And I also saw Neutral Milk Hotel at Green Man, the full band but I was with Ellis, and Ellis kept on going on about how Oasis were better at Nebworth.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard. How dare he?
But I really, I enjoyed the night. But it was weird. Like, I remember just like thinking, this is the band I've sort of wanted to see for like 15 years, but I'm sort of having a more of a fun time because Alice is being...
Like, I saw Belle and Sebastian playing If You're Feeling Sinister, and I saw Gang of Four playing that album. That's good. Yeah. And I saw, I've seen... Entertainment. And then I saw My Bloody Valentine playing Loveless, I want to say. Why is it? I have no recall anymore. And all of those were fantastic experiences. Yeah, well, I'll tell you a band who I think are very unfairly maligned and derided, and who are...
Steps.
The S5, as I call them. Gomez. I think Gomez are really, really treated like a 90s novelty band, and actually they're right. a great band. They released two albums that I will continue to defend until I am dead in the ground, and probably other albums that I haven't really bothered seeking out, and they still play together, and they love to play together, and they're still a great band to go and see. So there you go.
I'd go and see that. I mean, I can't imagine. Is his voice still
the same?
Oh, his voice
is fucking incredible.
He sounded like a 70-year-old man when he was 25.
But he looked like he'd sort of come to fix your computer.
They're amazing. I'm worried that even the way I'm talking about them in their defence is like patronising. They're a fucking great band, and they don't deserve to be treated like a heritage band, is what I mean.
They were probably a bit ahead of their time with their sort of like nerd chic.
Yeah, it was very out of kilter with the kind of post like late
completely and
sound.
What I loved about them a bit, and I think one of the reasons they're still really successful in America, and it's because they were these guys in like Matlock Bath playing like they were in Nevada, you know, or like in New Mexico. And I think it's one of the reasons I really liked to listen to them as a teenager, was because I was like, this feels like it's in a completely different place. Sorry, I know this isn't a Gomez podcast, another Gomez minutes.
I remember getting really told off at school for saying that I thought he sounded really cool because he sounded like he drank a bottle of whiskey and smoked 40 fags a day. And then a teacher went, "That's cool, is it?" Trying to make me like, feel like a dick in front of the whole class. So, yes, I do think that is quite cool, actually, because I'm 14. Okay, were you going to go to Glastonbury this year?
Yeah, I was.
So that way you would have seen Paul then?
Was Paul McCartney headlining?
Yeah, he was headlining
Saturday.
I would have 100% gone seeing him, and it would have been wonderful.
Oh my god!
And I would have had a great time.
Yeah.
Well, he is doing it next year, so.
God, I hope I can.
Just make sure you get on the
bill. But do you know what happened? I tend to be put on clashing with the thing I'm most interested in. And not only is it bad for my audience, because my audience, if I was my number one fan, I wouldn't choose me over, like, Paul Simon playing Graceland or, like, fucking Bella Sebastian, you know, all bands that I love. And, like, I have clashed with some of the greatest Glastonbury sets of all time.
Yeah, I think we did that. When I played at Gravenhurst at Glastonbury, we played, it was the same time as Bjork. So I've never seen Bjork. That's annoying. And we also, with Jan, we played at Coachella once, and it was the... Yeah, that was fun. But it's weird, it sort of felt like because we were just there for one day, sort of in and out, it felt like you were kind of a tourist there. You felt like you weren't really at the festival kind of thing. But yeah...
I've done a number of music festivals like that, and you feel like you're being airlifted in and out.
Yeah, it's really weird. But then I think it was one of the first Pavement reunion tours. I was hoping to catch them, but then we just came off and you could just hear them doing... Ending Cut Your Hair, which was like their last song.
Brutal.
Just floating over the... Yeah. God, I've got such bad luck playing a Coachella and not seeing Pavement.
So a lot of Beatles songs I came to because I had a friend called Jess, but she used to make me mixtapes and they were so good. I remember her putting Day Tripper on, and it sort of would put the Beatles alongside like Riot Girl stuff and Beatles alongside kind of like 90s weirdness. And I liked that being a part of it because it's kind of like... made them seem really relevant and contemporary always.
Yeah, that's true. I think I was thinking about that because I was trying to remember when I last saw Help, and I realised it was like when I was in my school, the band I was in at school, and it was like, you know, we'd be listening to Metallica or doing Nirvana covers and then watching Help. Like, it was all part of the same thing. Like, I think it was probably because Anthology was on TV, so it was just like, I was really into that and... really into Gorky's, and it all fitted together somehow. Like, I remember...
Oh, yeah, Gorky's and the Beatles, like, completely.
Because I lived in Bristol, we could pick up S4C, and on S4C one night there was, like, an hour of Gorky's, this... I think it was called Banana? I can't remember. But it was an hour of, like, their music videos and stuff, and, like, we just had... So, basically, we only had the one... I can't remember why, but I had to inflict it on my dad because it was like the only TV, and like so my dad was forced to watch an hour of Gorky's just total random weirdness in Welsh, and at the end he said, "I think John Lennon would have liked it."
Oh,
which really nice. But yeah, Gorky's definitely was all part of it for me. That kind of getting into the Beatles and kind of it felt like they were in touch with that kind of thing.
And I was listening to Back in the USSR, which my daughter absolutely loved, like, and started like just dancing like that too, like an old man, like Chaz and Dave dance. And I was thinking about Charmless Man by Blur, you know, the potato together, and that's just stolen off of Back in the USSR. And I was like, oh yeah, so much Blur, particularly that album is just like full rip-off of the Beatles.
That's interesting. Yeah,
especially his guitar parts as well. I think he's he's got exactly the same ethos, Graham Coxon, as George Harrison, in that he's the sort of unshowy, but playing like really sort of complicated and technically impressive stuff that just is so like sort of textural. Without him, he's the lead guitarist, but he very rarely, you know, steps up to the front of the stage and goes mad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you always know that he's the sort of best bit in a way, in a lot of it. I'm a big fan of his. And he's also in that Beatles cover band, isn't he? With the bloke from... Isn't it him and the bloke and Matt Bellamy from Muse? And
is he?
Yeah, they're called like the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely... It's like a pun on Sgt. Pepper.
Really?
And they're like a sort of super group and they do... like the occasional festival.
Do you have theories about the Beatles where you're like, John and Paul were tempering figures to one another and yin and yang? Do you believe all that shit?
I don't believe it in a sort of spiritual way, but definitely that's the balance that makes that writing relationship so good. Mm-hmm. I think they are, in a way, polar opposites that somehow manage to be complementary.
I do think there's something... Yeah, that's... Sorry, I interrupted you.
So then do you feel as if their solo stuff is like the porridge that's too hot and the porridge that's too cold?
I think you're absolutely right, yeah. There is definitely stuff that could deal with a little bit of... Or they are mainly, just even if he had written in the same room as John, and he'd be like, don't write that, it's ridiculous.
I think what's amazing about the Beatles' run is that they didn't have a bit where they kind of dropped the ball, really. You know?
They got out.
And so there is...
Well, meeting people more.
They won, yeah. So there is a kind of, like... It was something that's magic about that time. Like, imagine, like, you know, you're getting in the studio for Let It Be and you think, oh, God, not another album. And then Paul comes in with the song Let It Be. It's like, are you fucking insane? You know, it's like, I've only had about 3 months off. You know, this is like, it's magical, I think, that's about that, them being together. There's something.
But that's the joy of getting out when, you know, exactly like you say, leaving people wanting more. And it allows us to just spend decades going on about whether that was the right thing or what would have happened afterwards.
Which is so much better than spending decades being like, and then, of course, there was the 5 years they did this, you know? That one, look at, you know, the fucking Rolling Stones.
Yeah, still waiting for them to top Beggar's Banquet. Might still happen.
I was listening to the Stones... Because I was teaching Sweet Virginia. Do you know that song?
I'm sure I do.
That's good. But with all this, I mean, I love the Stones. It's like, I don't know. It's all about kind of, it's about a posture and a creating a mood more than like song craft.
Yes. You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Completely.
Which is great. Like, I love it.
But, well, it's why they work really well as film and TV score.
I think the thing is with that comparison is that people are so desperate to have some kind of metric with which you measure what the Beatles was, and they were just the closest thing to hand, But actually, because it's a complete disservice to both of them to compare them, because they're so different. And it's always going to, like, A, they're completely incomparable, because the Beatles are just miles ahead of them. And B, they're just, you know, they're not trying to be what the Beatles were. And they didn't become great until they stopped trying to be the Beatles and realised that they were really fucking good at being the Stones.
Yeah,
that's true. That was Josie Long, and that was a really lovely episode. I enjoyed chatting to Josie a lot.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We had a few technical issues there, so apologies if the audio quality isn't quite up to standard, but we got there in the end. Mm. And yeah, I mean, the quality of the content more than makes up for it. It was really, really fun.
Yeah, it was really great.
Enjoyed it.
Mm. Yeah, I liked it.
Thank you so much to Josie for joining us. That was wicked. We'll be back next week with another really, really funny episode that we recorded, our first IRL recording that we did a few weeks ago with Darren Jono Johnson from Sheeps, who are a comedy trio that he is in with Liam Williams and Al Roberts, and they are fantastically funny. He's a massive Beatles fan, a massive music fan, a musician himself, and that was one of my favourite ones we've done. So
it was great. A few cans were drunk, and it was a very, very enjoyable chat. We talked a lot about heavy metal and Only Fools and Horses.
A lot of favourite Beatle chat, and you know, it was a good mix between the sort of, I mean, he's a big fan, so it was a good mix between the sort of nerdy and the tangential and the personal, which is what we're after.
Yeah, it's great.
So that's a great one. If you want to do a little bit of research, then you can look up a lot of cheap stuff on the internet. They really are one of the best sort of acts on the comedy circuit.
And fingers crossed we might be able to get Al in at some point, because that would be good too.
Yeah, hoping so. So thank you so much for listening. If you got this far, please do give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. As we said at the top of the show, it really does help, and it's really, really appreciated. And if you want to contribute to the show, you can go to personalbeatles.com/donate. We'll be back next Tuesday with Jono.
Your Own Personal Beatles is presented by Jack Pelling and Robin Allender. The podcast artwork is done by Morgan Ritchie. It's produced by me, Jack Pelling, and is a Homespun Sounds production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.